My name is Tom Mirabella, and my family ministers in Chiba, Japan. And first slide there, that's my family, my wife Karen. I'm sorry she can't be here with us today. Our kids are all in school. We're living in Virginia for this year while we're home, and so it's hard to travel with everyone, pull them out of school. My kids are, my oldest is Kylie, she's 18, Josiah is 17, AJ is 13, and then twins, Matthias and Layton, will be 11 next month. So as we serve in Japan, many people wonder why Japan? I even, you know, often when I go to missions conferences, if you're like me, I hear mission after missionary sharing about the place they're at, and I always feel like, oh, I want to go there, or, you know, I want to support that. Like everyone sounds so good, and we appreciate the callings that different people have. But I want to tell you why Japan is our calling and the importance of it as a mission field. So Japan, it's a nation of 127 approximately million people. It's the 11th largest country in the world. Japan, size-wise, is about the size of the state of California. So it gives you a sense of that 127 million, that's about 40% of the population of the U.S. in a state the size of California. But about 84% of Japan is mountainous. So there's Mount Fuji, their famous place, which means that most of the population lives in 16% of the country, which makes it among the most densely populated places in the world. This is a photo of Shinjuku train station in Tokyo. It's one of the right there in the center of Tokyo where the trains pass through. 3.64 million people pass through this train station every day on average, the busiest rail station in the world. And that adds up to 1.26 billion people passing through here every year. So when you think of Japan, you may think of many of the products that you have in your home. Japan's the third largest economy in the world. They produce things like Honda and Toyota. You might have in your garage, you might have in your den, things from Panasonic or Sony. Japan has a lot of cultural things they introduced, Nintendo and Hello Kitty, Pokemon, of course, Godzilla. I don't live in the Congo. It's not the most dangerous place to live in. Japan's a very safe place. And other than the frequent monster attacks on Tokyo, it's quite safe to live in. One of the things about manufacturing, Japan has what they call zero defect manufacturing. Their goal is we don't want to make any mistakes. And if they're making a DVD player or a car, you would certainly appreciate having zero defects. But the culture of Japan is a zero defect culture. When they raise their children, when they live their lives, the desire is to not make any mistakes, to have zero defects. And what we see is that while that's great for making DVD players, it's a terrible way to live your life. It's crushing. This next photo is some kids on a train. As I said, it's very safe. Kids will ride the train to commute to school from kindergarten age. They'll hop on the train and cross through the city to go to school. I shared yesterday about some of the depression and the suicide rates very high for those kids in Japan. They work so hard, going to school in the morning, going to a second school in the afternoon, in order to prepare for entrance exams into middle school, high school, college. It's an enormous weight and pressure that is placed upon people. It's a shot there. I talked yesterday about the suicide rate tracked by days in Japan, and you see that spike there. That's September 1st. That's the first day of the school. The school year starts in April, but the second term starts September 1st. They come back from a break, summer break, and just that thought of returning of the what I think is just the crushing expectations, the bullying, the pressure. That's the number one day that youth commit suicide. And you see the other spike is right there. That's in the start of April. That's the start of the new school year. So it really speaks to just the environment that these kids are in that is really crushing them. This is a picture of an assembly at a school in Japan, probably graduation. I had some kids in my, I teach in our Christian school, and some of our kids have come from Japanese schools. And they said, you know, for our graduation ceremony from middle school to high school, we practiced for hours and hours, for weeks and weeks to prepare for this graduation. I said, well, what did you do? And they said, well, they had us practice marching in and then sit and do nothing. And they said, we practiced it for just weeks, and we had to go, you know, we would sit, we'd practice sitting, doing nothing, so that by the time the graduation came, they could sit for 3 hours and do the ceremony and do nothing. And it speaks to this, we want everything to look good and to focus on the appearance and performance. And as I say, this is, it's crushing to the spirits of people. I mentioned yesterday this saying in Japan, the nail that sticks up must be hammered down. And that's a saying that means that if you don't fit in, if you're not kind of up to the standard of everyone else, if you're even maybe exceeding everyone else, you need to be brought to sort of conformity with everyone. And that's a major goal. You know, the United States, we are, if you look at sociologist study worldwide, we are the most individualistic culture in the world, probably in the history of the world. Japan is very high on the other side, corporate duty. You owe your allegiance to the group. They're a shame-based culture that if you don't do well, you not only, it's not just you, but it's your family, it's your school, your culture, those around you, that you're bringing shame to them. And so that puts an enormous weight on people. I mentioned in Japan, there's a population of people they call hikikomori, and it's a word that means turning inward. And there's a population, primarily adolescent males, but it crosses all demographics. Estimated 1 to 3 million Japanese have this condition, where it's basically it's a form of depression and reclusivism, where these kids will lock themselves in their bedrooms. They quit school, again, to avoid the pressure, the bullying, all that's there. They don't go to school. They don't go to a job. They don't go hang out with friends. They lock themselves in their bedrooms and just don't come out. They might be on the internet playing video games, but they have almost zero social interaction, or no face-to-face interaction with people, even often with their own families. They'll lock themselves in their bedrooms to avoid that contact. As I talked about the population density in Japan, I think for many people, when you live in a culture where your duty is to all those around you, and you're constantly surrounded by people, I mean, just incredible dense population, where are you going to go to avoid people? Where are you going to go to escape the pressure and the expectations? It's your bedroom, right? So to get away from all of that, people have fled to their bedrooms. This photo, it demonstrates what's called a 4-2-1 child. China has for a long time had a one-child policy. The government said you can only have one child. Japan does not have any government policy, but sociologically, just the pressures of just the cost of living and expectations on kids, it's very common for Japanese to just have one child in their family. And so a 4-2-1 child refers to four grandparents who each had one child, so then there's two parents who have one child, right? So there's this narrowing of the population, of sort of a downward pyramid. And when we talk about this hikikomori thing, kids lock themselves in their bedroom, I think for most Americans, they kind of think, well, if my kid locked himself in his bedroom, I would go, I'd open the door, I'd unlock the door, I'd knock it down, I'd get him up, I'd say, you're getting out of here, you're going to school, you're going to go live your life. You can't have a hikikomori without an enabling culture. There's got to be a mother or a father who's making food and bringing it to the kid and who's doing the laundry for them. And so there's this, because there's so much expectation placed on oftentimes one child in the family, when this hikikomori situation begins to happen, there's a sort of unhealthy relationship where oftentimes the mom will allow it to happen and keep it going. But it's partly tied to the fact that you've got two different families that sort of all of their hope in the future is based on this one child, which, of course, then increases the pressure that kid's under. We don't only see great pressure in for kids in school. We see it in the workforce. The Japanese work environment is one that is incredibly unhealthy. You basically, when you go to work for a Japanese corporation, the expectation is that your life is given to that company. People work extremely long hours. They're expected to not only work long hours, but then to socialize with their coworkers after work. Japan's a very hierarchical culture, and so you don't criticize your boss at work, but after work, when the alcohol is flowing, there's a little more freedom to speak freely that happens at that point. There's a man in my church in Japan, he's a Christian, and he leaves for work Monday morning. Early in the morning, he takes a train into Tokyo. Actually, I think he drives. He drives into Tokyo. He's a researcher at a university. He works the full day. He sleeps at his desk for 5 nights. He comes home Saturday night, oftentimes so tired his wife said he'll fall asleep in the car in the driveway at their house. She wakes him up Sunday morning, and they go to church. He spends that day at home with his family. He spends one night at home, and then Monday morning he starts it over again. This is a Christian, right? So this is not even just the general world. And I preached a sermon about workaholism, and he came to me afterwards. He said, that's me. What should I do? This is one of our struggles in Japan. How do we teach Christians to Sabbath, to rest, to make priorities of their families, when everyone else is doing this? You know, do we want the Christians to have, the Christians, they're the lazy ones that don't work, right? They don't stay after and work like everyone else. We don't want that. But how do we teach them to have correct priorities that honor God and care for their families? And Japan itself understands this problem. So this is a shot of typical on the subway at night. You see Japanese, they call them salarymen. That's actually the word in Japanese, salaryman. It means businessman, salaryman. But you'll see them just exhausted coming home on the trains. This next one, it's a sign that was posted in the train station in Tokyo. It says, hey, dangerous, right? And it says, hey, dangerous. On the way home, drunken, staggering, and smartphone walking are dangerous. But you see the Japanese businessman, he's got his tie around his head, right? Sort of the stereotype of a drunken businessman walking home. But we see this absentee fathers and husbands, they're working, this high rate of alcoholism. The government is looking at this, and they're saying, we need to fix this. Next shot is what's called a capsule hotel. So if you want to spend the night, instead of going home on the subway, you can stay in Tokyo. And it's kind of like a morgue, right? If you ever see on, your Law and Order or whatever, when they pull the body out of the morgue and the shelf, that this is what you can rent. It's basically a bed And there's a communal bathroom that you use, and you sleep in these little capsules, and there's a TV on the ceiling. So people will use this to sleep in Tokyo. I would say $30 to $40 for a night, but much cheaper than a hotel would cost. And the hotels are, they're tiny also, but it's a more affordable way. So this next one is the government started a program called Premium Friday. And because they see this problem, people overworking, and they said, we want people to go home early. And so they've asked companies to, on the fourth Friday of the month, to let their employees go home at 3 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock. So you see, the 6 o'clock, it's dark, everyone's sad, they're going home. 3 o'clock, they're happy, they're going off on a trip he's taking a bath with a monkey in that picture. They go to the hot springs, it's very popular in Japan. Go out for dinner with your friends, go shopping. And what it says is, if people would leave work early, it would help the economy, it'd be better for everyone. So we need to do that. Japan has something called karoshi, which means death from overwork. There was a sort of a scandal recently where this company, the president was forced to resign from the largest advertising company in Japan. Because there was a young girl who was working there. She was not taking any time off, just tons of overtime, and she killed herself. And it became a scandal because they had been covering up her hours. And this is very common. There are labor laws in Japan, but the open secret is that companies fake their labor hours in order to avoid breaking these laws. And people are working just enormous amounts of overtime, not taking any days off. The problem is then that it's crushing the culture. This next photo shows the Japan's projected population. And Japan is the longest life expectancy in the world. But because they're not having children, people are not getting married. A lot of women don't want to leave the workforce to have families, to be forced to kind of stay home with a husband that's gone all the time. They're having small families, you can imagine. If your husband's never home, you're not going to want to have a big family, right? This is a breakdown in marriage, breakdown in families. They say 3/5 of men 25 to 35 are unmarried in Japan. Population is projected to drop by 60% over the next 100 years. And so, I said before, suicide is a problem in Japan individually. Actually, as a culture, they are committing suicide because they are not having enough children to keep their culture going. And that they have, we look at the United States and the potential Social Security problems in the future and how are we going to sustain this. Japan's demographics are far, far worse than the U.S. And the thing is, these statistics, what they point to is a country that looks good on the outside, but that on the inside is rotting away. It's broken. People are they're being crushed by expectation and culture, and they're dying. They're surrounded by people, but they are among the loneliest people in the world, not seeking out relationship. Not to be too graphic, but the love robot industry is centered in Japan. Like, that's where it's coming from, because there's this, people can't find love, they don't have a relationship, and they're seeking alternatives to that. And it's incredibly sad. I believe the root of all of these problems is the near total absence of the church in Japan. We talked a lot about unreached people groups this weekend. The Japanese are the second largest unreached people group in the world. Around 120 million Japanese in Japan. That's one, ethno-linguistic group. And the population is about 0.3% evangelical Christian. That's something like one in 200 people, one in 250 that would be a Christian in that culture. The religion of Japan is a syncretism of Shinto and Buddhism. So Shinto is the traditional religion of Japan. Buddhism was introduced through China. They're different religions, but if you were to ask your average Japanese, are you Shinto? Yes. Are you Buddhist? Yes. They practice both nominally. This next shot is the... can you put the next one? Yeah, this is in Asakusa. It's a famous temple district in downtown Tokyo. It's a big tourist spot. As you enter, this is called the Kaminadan Gate. It's the Thunder Gate, and there's this big lantern. And there are four statues, one on each corner of this base. You can see two of them. And two of them are Buddhist, they're incarnations of Buddha. Two of them are Shinto gods that are presented there. And so as you go through this area, there are Shinto shrines, there are Buddhist temples, all mixed together. This next shot is actually a video, and they're coming up to the temple at Asakusa. And you see they place some coins in, really just a tiny amount of money. It's not anything significant. They clap, and then they offer a prayer. And you see this man teaching his kids, and you see the line of people all there to pray. They come to make a prayer for oftentimes to do well in school or for a new job or for a test coming up. And what always strikes me is that the reason for the clapping, they say, is to get the God's attention. So they know I'm placing an offering right now so that, you know, I want to get credit for what I'm doing, so you'll grant my prayer. And it reminds me of when Elijah was confronting the prophets of Baal, right? And there's 400 prophets of Baal, and they're cutting themselves, and just carrying on, trying to ask Baal to send fire down on their offering. And Elijah mocks them. And he says, maybe your God is sleeping. Right? He says, maybe he's in the restroom, right? But we have a God who never sleeps, never slumbers. The Japanese historical religions, they don't have a concept of an omniscient, all-powerful creator God. I think it's one of the things that has delayed the advance of the gospel in Japan. This next shot is they sell charms at the temple there. People will come and they'll want to buy little good luck charms. For the most part, the religion in Japan is it's surface level. It's not a deep heart level. Was talking to a man in my English class, and I said, "So you're Buddhist, Shinto? You know, do you go to the temple?" He said, "Oh, I don't really go to the temple." He said, "Once a year, I go and I purchase this good luck charm for my daughter to keep in her car for safety while driving." And I think that's very typical of Japanese. There's a veneer of religion. We do things kind of good luck, like a four-leaf clover kind of thing, but it's not a religion that really kind of affects them day to day in their life of how they live, and it doesn't give them hope in the future. This verse is one that has it really kind of guides our belief of what we're doing in Japan. You know, Jesus says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." They're a culture that does not rest. And Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. You'll find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." What we see in Japan is that there is this crushing yoke of expectation, of performance, that it's destroying the culture. And people need the grace of the gospel. So that's what we are there to do. Our team went about 30 years ago to Chiba, which is the East Tokyo metro area. This next shot's a little closer in, picture of that same Yokohama, Tokyo, Chiba. And then this next one shows, you see those three little chapels there on the bottom of the screen. We are part of Oyumino Christ Church. It's a church of about 250 people with it's a multi-site, multi-congregation church with Japanese leadership. That's who we work with. Some of the ministries that we do, I do English classes. This is some of my class. We had a Thanksgiving tea party, and so spent time. We talked about what Thanksgiving is, this concept of giving thanks to God. This next shot is an English camp that we did for kids. English is, people want to learn English all over the world, and so it gives us opportunities to provide sort of a service, something they want. But then also what we'll do is I'll teach an English class and then do a Bible study afterwards. We'll read the Bible in English and talk about it. These kids' camps, it's basically VBS, but with English lessons, but we sing Christian praise songs, and we talk with them about God in order to plant seeds for these kids for the future. Hospitality is an important part of our ministry. This is my wife, Karen. Actually, and her mother, with our Japanese neighbor and a friend of hers. This next shot is in our house, having a group to our house after church, just to spend time. Japanese do not tend to have people in their homes, and so hospitality it's a wonderful witness to have deep relationship. Our neighbor, Karen asked her, she said, "You've lived in this neighborhood for 20, 30 years. Do you know everyone?" And she said, "No, I really don't know anyone." She said, "I know my next-door neighbor because it's in Japan, you have trash duty. There's this trash station. You take turns cleaning up, and it rotates. And so you have to pass on the bags and stuff to the next person." And so she says, "I know the person next to me because I pass on my trash duty. And I know a person who lives, this one other lady, she lives in the neighborhood." But basically, she said she feels isolated, and she doesn't know even the people that she lives around. Our main ministry is in working with a bilingual congregation called Alive International. Because we're in Japan, so why are we doing bilingual ministry? Well, one of the reasons for that is it's what was been talked about, like with this talking about college ministry right here in Japan. Try to reach people from all the world come to the United States to go to college. One of the things we do is try to reach what we call returnees. So people who have come to the U.S. or another English-speaking country to go to college, to work. And they come back they might get some exposure to the church. And they visit a church and they go back to Japan and they want to see a church again. But the church, many Japanese churches don't feel like this. They're tiny. They're oftentimes not healthy. And so people, they get exposure to the church overseas. They go back to Japan. They say, "I don't really like the church in Japan." But we have a church that it's welcoming to Japanese people, but there's English songs it's the songs they learned overseas and in worship and these kind of things. And so it's a real good chance to reach them. We also reach mixed families where you might have an English speaker and a Japanese speaker who have gotten married. They're raising their kids bilingually. We're able to reach them as well. So we say we're reaching internationals and internationally minded Japanese. We do a lot of, this is a picture of our worship. We sing our songs in English and Japanese. Next shot is one of our leadership team. And then this is some children's ministry at Easter. They're dying Easter eggs. I had a chance to baptize this little boy, Daiki. So the husband is Filipino, the wife is Japanese. Perfect example of the people we're reaching. Anthony's actually an intern. Been working with him. He's hoping to go to seminary eventually and come back to Japan as a pastor. Another ministry we do is with a Christian school. So this is the high school from our school, Covenant Community School International. And it's a great place where we feel like we can minister to the future generations of Japanese as well as to our own missionary kids. I had the chance to do a communicants class with, these are primarily missionary kids from the school, mostly elementary and middle school. And as I mentioned yesterday, part of the way our school works is by having interns who come from the States to work with us. And Karen Karen and I have had a lot of opportunities to mentor the interns who come. And this is Karen with two of our interns and my daughter, Kylie. Would put a plug in for those of you who are younger, getting ready to graduate from high school or college. Come to Japan, spend a few months, spend a year. We need people to come and help us in our school and to see the ministry going on there. There's just some more interns with us. So in closing, thanks for your time. I have a little station set up here. We do an email newsletter. I'd love for you to sign up for that so that I can get that to you. And I'm out of time. So thank you for your support. And I'd love to talk to anyone. If you have questions, I'll be around through after the lunch.